I would like to speak about the Messiah, and especially the time that we are living now. And I think we don't have so much time until he comes. One of the things I've been studying during many years is the timeline of the events. One thing is to know when he was born, when Yeshua was born, and another thing is to know when he comes back. And I think I can present three witnesses about his second coming. Maybe they are false witnesses, but we should listen to them. Maybe they are true witnesses.
In Israel we have every time more pressure from inside and from outside. And I believe that's the time when the prophet spoke about the time of trouble for Jacob. And we are very close to that time. The Christians call it the Great Tribulation.
Yes.
And it speaks about the birth pangs of the Messiah also. And you know, when a woman is getting close to the time of the birth, she has the birth pangs every time stronger and stronger and closer and closer.
When do you believe they started? When Israel became a nation, or more recent?
Yeah, I think so, you could say. But now we see things accelerate all the time. And one of the things that is decisivo.
Decisive,
okay. Is Jerusalem and the Temple Mount. We have had quite status quo in the Jerusalem Temple area for many years. And now we are experiencing a change because of the situation. Well, I could say these things. The state of Israel wants status quo on the Temple Mount. The Arabs want the Jews to go out of the area.
What's status quo that they want? Just peace?
Yeah.
Just the ability to have access? That's status quo to them?
Yes, nothing has to change. Because when Jordan invaded Jerusalem in 1948 until 1967, the area of the mosque, the temple area, was under Jordan rule. When Jerusalem was conquered in 1967, and the area of the temple was also conquered, the Israeli authorities decided to give the right to Waqf. It's a Muslim government, you can call it, ruled by Jordan, over the Temple Mount. Even if it's under Israeli rule, Israelis gave, the Israel government gave it to the Muslims, the right to rule over that area. That means that there are Muslim policemen on the temple area and also Jewish policemen. It was because of the international pressure. Because Israel is, the state of Israel, it's not a free state. It depends a lot of international pressure. It was the United Nations that gave the right to the Jewish people to have their own homeland, you know. So Israel has to try to be in peace with the international society. There is much influence, especially from the United States and so on.
And we have important influence, bad.
Yeah, now things are getting worse. Things are getting worse. There is a very strong Jewish desire to get the temple back from the Orthodox Jewish people. And there is an institute called the Temple Institute, which is preparing all the tools for the third temple. We have the menorah in gold. You can go and see it in Jerusalem. And we have the robes of the high priest. And we are preparing priests to serve in the third temple. And Jewish people want to go into the temple area and worship, at least pray. And it's forbidden. So it's very difficult. It's a difficult situation because the Muslims come and scream and tell them to go out and leave that area because it's a Muslim area. So the Jewish policemen tell the Jewish people before they go into the area, it's forbidden to say any prayer in this place, to bow down, do anything like pray.
Is this the Western Wall included in this?
No.
Okay. The top.
It's the area where. So just last week, two Jewish boys went into the temple area and they went down on the floor to worship God. And that caused a revolution among the Arabs that were there. They started to scream and the policemen threw them out. I'm sure they went to jail for some time because they worshipped God on the Temple Mount. You know, that's and the state of Israel is supporting this situation. And they want it to be like that. And that's one of the things that is very tense in
the state of Israel is supporting the activity of the police to remove them.
Yeah, they want status quo. They don't want any kind of disturbance on that area. Yeah.
Is this the first time that a Jewish person has prayed in our lifetime on that ground?
No.
Okay. This happened.
You can find the YouTube videos with young boys going all the temple area and praying psalms, and they were filming. And for some reason, the policemen were not there, so they just took their time with the Hebrew singing worships to God and things like that. So, well, that's a very tense situation. And one of the reasons is that there was a rabbi, he lived during the 18th century, Vilna Gaon. He's called Vilna Gaon. He prophesied about the biggest synagogue in Jerusalem. During his time, that synagogue was built. It's called Churba. And it's the biggest synagogue in Jerusalem. It's about 5 minutes walk from the Western Wall. And during his time, it was built by the Jewish community in Jerusalem. But they had not so much prosperity, let's say that. So they could not continue the building of the synagogue. And the Arabs that gave the money as loans to the Jewish community to build the synagogue destroyed the synagogue because the Jews couldn't pay the loans. And that was during the time of Rabbi... he's called Vilna Gaon.
1700s.
Yeah. And he said, this synagogue, Churba, it will be destroyed twice and will be rebuilt twice.
Huh.
And the second time is finished, then the temple will be started to be built.
It's only been destroyed once.
No. It was rebuilt in the middle of the 19th century.
That's the same.
And was destroyed by the Jordan warriors in 1948.
To destroy.
And now it was rebuilt and was finished 6 years ago. In 2010. So when that happened, the Arabs that knew about this prophecy, they said, now they will come and take the Temple Mount, the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And they started to attack us in Jerusalem because of this. The Churba, whose name means ruin, was initially built by disciples of Rabbi Judah HaHasid in the early 18th century. It was destroyed shortly thereafter by Muslim demanding the return of the loans given to build the synagogue. After it was rebuilt in the mid-19th century, it became the most important synagogue in the country. But it was blown up in 1948 by the Jordan Legion a few days before the fall of the Jewish quarter in the War of Independence. And it was rebuilt now in March 2010. During the 18th century, the Vilna Gaon, a respected rabbinical authority, prophesied that the Churva synagogue in Jerusalem, which was built during his day, would be destroyed and rebuilt twice, and that when the Churva was completed for the third time, construction on the third temple would begin. This is Israel newspaper, Israel Today, wrote about that. I would like to speak about three witnesses who is speaking more or less the same time for the second coming of the Messiah. The prophet Joel says that the sun will be turned into darkness and the moon will be blood before the day of the Lord comes, the great and terrible day. That's Joel 2:31. And I was investigating when will the next solar eclipses happen in Jerusalem, because prophecy has to be understood from Jerusalem, not from America. So if the prophet speaks about a solar eclipse, it has to do with Jerusalem, not with this part of the world. Or moon, blood moons, or things like that. If you see the blood moon in Jerusalem, it's okay. It has to do with the prophecy. Or if you have blood moons in this area of the world, God may be speaking to the Jewish people here, but he has not level of significance as the prophecies in the Bible. Because the Bible was not written outside of the land of Israel. It's very important to understand prophecy in connection with the land of Israel. If you go out, you will lose the north, as we say in Spain. I was living in Spain for 20 years. So you lose the north. So, if you want to see this prophecy of Joel fulfilled, you have to study when the sun and the moon will be affected these ways in Jerusalem, or from the earth, from the land of Israel. And I found in the future, I was investigating, there is a program called Starry Night, based on the NASA investigations, and you can go back in history, you can go into the future and look at the sky from anywhere on the place on the earth. And you can also go to the moon and look at the earth and things like that. It's all mathematics. And I found a solar eclipse followed by a moon, a red blood moon. It could be seen in Israel. The first one will be August the 2nd of the year 2027. It will look like this, almost dark, the sun, in Jerusalem area. The center will be here in Egypt, somewhere.
That would be full eclipse right there.
Yeah, the full eclipse will be in this area, Egypt. And that will be followed by a moon, two blood moons. The first one will be a total blood moon, the 31st of December 2028. That could be a sign, according to the prophet Joel, from Israel. It says that the sun has to turn dark and the moon has to turn red or blood before the day of the Lord. So the Lord will not come before 2029. Right? That's the first witness. Sorry? No, that's the 31 of December.
Oh, yeah, children, yeah.
So after that, he can come. Right?
That's for a solar eclipse? Is that what you're saying?
Solar eclipse and moon eclipse.
And
both.
Both.
And that's the order. The prophet says first the sun and then the moon. That order.
Because there's a solar eclipse supposed to be on the 9th of May. Later. This next week.
Where?
But
in Israel. Google says
yeah, it has to be followed by a red moon.
But that, yeah. That's, yeah. I didn't...
Yeah, it's according to the prophet, you have to have both.
Okay.
Both the sun and the moon. And I was looking for all of them. Mm-hmm. And the first one I saw that was followed by red moon was this one.
Okay.
2027 and 28. That's the first witness that speaks about his coming. It could be this one, right? The second thing that we can study is the prophet Hosea. He says, let's see, we can look up that scripture. Chapter 6, verse 2. Did you say Hosea?
Hosea.
Hosea, in Hebrew. Hosea. Okay. After 2 days he will revive us. On the third day he will raise us up, that we may live before him. Okay, 2 days. Could be 2,000 years, right? You know about the psalm that Moses says that for God, one day is like 1,000 years. So when you speak about days, you can also speak about 1,000 years. That's why we have a week of 6,000 years from Adam and to the Messiah. And then we have 1,000 years of messianic reign from Jerusalem. So you have a week of 6 days of work, and then you have 1 day of rest. From Adam to the second coming of the Messiah, that's 6,000 years. In the Talmud it speaks about the world that should have 6 days, 6,000 years before the remission, the year of, and that would be the seventh day, like 1,000 years. 2,000 years with the confusion, 2,000 years with Torah, with the Word of God, and 2,000 years with the Messiah, and then the Shabbat will come. That's how Talmud speaks. In the Sanhedrin 95 or something like that. And then it says, but because of our sins, those days were lost. Speaking about the days of the Messiah. Because 4,000 years after Adam, they were waiting the coming of the Messiah. That's why when he came, he said, the time has come. He started to preach like that. The time has come. What time? The 4,000 years. The time of the Messianic era was to be introduced when he started to preach. So people were waiting for the Messiah. But then the Talmud says, because of our sins, those days were lost. But we know that he came. And we know that from that day when he was here, when he died and was rose, on the third day, something new happened in the spirit. There is a new dimension of the spirit world for 2,000 years. We are now in the messianic era, but it's not the messianic reign yet. So you have to divide between the messianic era and the messianic reign. The messianic reign of kingdom is for 1,000 years.
When he's not present physically here.
No, he's in heaven. He's hidden. It's like the bread you hide on Pesach, on Passover, you hide the bread. You know you hide the bread?
Yes, I don't know that well, but I've been explained.
Yeah, and you have to find the bread and eat the last bread. It's called afikoman. After the supper, you have to find the bread, the matzah, the unleavened bread, and everybody has to eat from it, because if you don't eat that bread, you cannot leave the room. That's the rules in the Jewish Passover. And that bread is called a tzafun. The name tzafun means the hidden. We have 15 steps on the Seder, the Passover night celebration, and that point, that step, is called tzafun. It means the hidden one. And that's the bread that is hidden, and the children have to go and find it. And sometimes when a child finds it, the leader, the father of the house, says, "You will get the prize I gave to my children when they found the hidden bread, a gift of important amount of money for Shavuot, for the Pentecostal celebration 50 days later. So they should count to the giving of the gift of the Father on Shavuot, because they found the afikoman, the hidden bread. So God hid his Messiah, and not all the people find him, but those who find him have a huge gift of the Spirit. So everything is in the Jewish tradition, also about the Messiah that had to be hidden. And it speaks also about the hidden light. When God created heaven and earth, he created light the first day. And that light was hidden. And suddenly he has to create the sun and the moon and stars, because this area of the universe needed light. So the first light that was hidden, it's called in the Jewish scriptures, it was the Messiah. And he was hidden under the throne of God. According to the Jewish Midrash, it's like a story that speaks about some kind of truth, even if the story is not true, but it reflects some deeper truth. So when Satan saw that God hid the light of the Messiah under his throne, he asked, "What is that hidden light you have under your throne?" And God said to him, "This is the one who will come and crush your head. And he will be revealed one day. He is the hidden secret of God. And I am very happy that he revealed that secret for me. One day he opened my spiritual eyes and I could see who he is. And if you know who he is, you are happy." Like Yeshua said to Peter, Rav Shimon Kefa, "You are blessed, Peter, because not flesh and blood revealed it to you, but my Father who is in heaven." And that's a revelation. If you know who he is, it's a revelation from God. And he's not giving that revelation to all the Jewish people, because he wants to save the Gentiles first. And he will take away the veil that he put over the Jewish people to be able to reveal the secret to the Gentiles. And one day Joseph will tell his brothers, "Here I am, I'm Joseph. You thought I was an Egyptian ruler? you were wrong. I was not Tzafnat Paneach. I'm Yosef. Ani Yosef. Is my father living still?" And it's very interesting, the name that Pharaoh gave to Joseph, it's Tzafnat Paneach, the same word as you have in the Passover, Tzafun, Tzafnat, that's the same word in Hebrew. Tzafnat. It means the secret, the hidden things. So when Pharaoh gave the name to Joseph, he gave him the revealer of secrets. But that's the same root as you find on the Passover Seder when it speaks about the hidden bread. So that Joseph was the hidden Messiah, the hidden bread, that the brethren didn't recognize him. The first time they saw him, when he was in Egypt, they thought he was a pagan god. And the Egyptians, maybe they worshipped him, I'm sure they did, because Pharaoh was a god, and when he went out with Joseph on the streets, everybody had to bow down their knees. Avrech, they said. It means bow down your knees and worship this new god. So Joseph was transformed from a Jewish guy to a pagan god that everybody had to worship as God. That's exactly what happened with Yeshua, the Messiah. They changed his name. They worshipped him. They put him Egyptian clothes, if you know, Roman clothes. And no Jewish people can recognize him. They don't see this is not our Messiah. That's exactly what happened in Egypt and what happened with the real Messiah, because God wanted to save the nations. He wanted to save all the people that came to Egypt to get food, because Joseph was the savior of the world. All the nations came to Egypt to get food. And he gave food. He was the one who gave salvation, life to the nations, and also to his brethren, the brothers that came from Canaan. And he gave them food, and they did not know that it was him.
His own brothers, right.
His own brothers ate from his life-giving activity without recognizing him. And it took the 1 year extra, and the second time they came to him, he said, all the Egyptians have to go out of here. I don't want any Egyptian to be here, because I want to speak Hebrew now. And I want to show my circumcision to my brothers. And he said, come closer, I will show you. And he started to speak Hebrew. And he said, Ani Yosef. I am Joseph. Is my father still living? The second time he was with his brothers, he revealed himself to them. So when he came the first time, his brothers didn't recognize him. And God hidden him to save the Gentiles. It's all written in the Torah. Nothing is new. Everything is written. What would happen with the Messiah? But the second time he will say, I am a Jewish guy. I'm not Tzachnat Paneach. I'm not an Egyptian. I'm your brother. I have a circumcision. Look at me. So that we're waiting for that day. And that was we went a little astray from the second witness, but we have to understand time is also, when we speak about 2 days, it could be 2,000 years. So, after 4,000 years, he came the first time. His brothers did not receive him. He was hidden away for 2,000 years. After 2,000 years, he will come back. And he will reveal himself to his brothers. And he will not be able to come back to Jerusalem until Jerusalem people, the leaders of Jerusalem, say to him, Baruch haba b'shem Adonai. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Because he said, I will leave you. But you will not see me again until you, Jerusalem, say to me. Then I will come back. So we are waiting for the Jewish people in Jerusalem to say to Yeshua, Baruch haba b'shem Adonai. He will not be able to come back before the Jewish people in Jerusalem recognizes him as the Messiah, David's son, and ask him to come back. That's a very important sign for us to know, because he said that when he left, I will not come back until you say to me these words. Matthew 23:37. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it, how often would I have gathered your children together as the hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you were not willing. See, your house is left to you desolate. For I tell you, he's speaking to Jerusalem, right? You will not see me again until you say, Jerusalem, blessed be he who comes in the name of the Lord. So that's a very important sign. The prophet says that after 2 days, we were in Hosea, right? After 2 days, he will revive us. 2 days.
You're saying that's 2,000 years since.
2,000 years.
Has ascended.
So when did he come the first time? He started to preach the year 27, according to the Roman calculation of the years. And he was crucified the year 31. 30 or 31? 48 years before the destruction of the temple, it says. I believe it was 31. So between 27 and 31, he was preaching 3.5 years. If you put 2 days more there, 2,000 years, you get to the years 2027 to 2031. That's the second witness. So is it speaking the same language? We had the sun and the moon from after 2029, the day of the Lord can come. The second witness says that two days after his first visit, he will come the second time. The year 29, there was a solar eclipse in Tiberias, 100% solar eclipse. It was completely dark. Year 29. So you have a prophecy there that the people who were in the shadow of death saw a great light when he established himself in Capernaum, right? You say Capernaum. How do you say in English?
Are you saying Capernaum?
Oh, Capernaum.
Capernaum.
That's the sixth
beautiful English.
Would you like a Texas version?
24, November 24, year 29.
So that's important. If you put 2,000 years after that, you get to the year 2029.
Now, was that on a feast? What was the Hebrew calendar of that?
No, I don't think that was on a feast. Okay, that's the second witness. The third witness is not so easy to understand. You need to know about what is sabbatical years and jubilee years. I am sure that the Messiah will come back on a jubilee year. You can see what the Torah speaks about the results of the jubilee year. Everybody will come back to his inheritance. All the prisoners will be released. All the people who have debts, they will be pardoned, get the debts canceled. And when he came to Nazareth, and they gave him the prophet Isaiah to read. Yeshaya in Hebrew. Yeshayahu. He read, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon, Lord God is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prison to those who are bound, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor."
Did he stop there? Right?
And then there he stopped. And the day of vengeance of our God. It speaks about a year. I believe when Yeshua spent, it's not only believe it, the year 27 was a Shabbat year in Israel. Shemitah. You know, the land of Israel, we cannot cultivate the land once every seventh year. We count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, and the seventh year is a the release year, when you don't have the right to plant or sow or reap on a commercial way. Everything that grows is for everybody. Nobody can say this is mine. So that's a Sabbath year, and people had not the right to work on the on farming. That's why he started to preach that year, because people had time to come and listen to his preaching. So you can see people came from everywhere, all the cities around. How could they come? They should be at work. No, they didn't work that year. That was a Shabbat year. So that when he speaks there, he says, I came to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. That's the Shabbat year. And I believe that he will come back on a Jubilee year. That's my conviction. What is a Jubilee year? Every 49th year.
Is it the 50th or the 49th?
Okay, I will explain. It's both. When Joshua conquered the land the first time, God said to him, when you conquer the land, you have to start to count the years, and every seventh year you have to have a release year, Shabbat, Shemitah in Hebrew. Hosea is the name of that man from the beginning, Hosea. And Moshe Rabbeinu changed his name and gave him the name Yehoshua.
Yeah.
And that's the long form of the name Yeshua. Yeshua is a shortened form of Yehoshua. So Moses knew the name of the Messiah and gave it to Yehoshua. Yehoshua conquered the land. Okay, when he conquered the land of Israel, he needed 14 years of war to conquer the land. And after 14 years, the land was under their feet. And they started to count the years. And every seventh year, they had to stop the agriculture production. And after 49 years, that means 7 weeks of years, they had to proclaim the 50th year as the Jubilee year.
The 50th.
And you can read in Torah about all the rules about the Jubilee year. Now, the 50th year is also the first year of the next cycle of 7 years. There is no break in the 7 year counting. So the 50th year is the first year in the next cycle. So the next 50th year would be 49 years between them. So every 49 years you have a Jubilee year. That's the way it works. You celebrate the Jubilee year 1 year after the Sabbath year. So you have two years of celebration. And that's why the Torah says, you may think, what shall we eat during the Jubilee year if we cannot sow or plant? And then God says, I will bless the sixth year, so the crops will endure for 3 years. You will have more than you need. First the Sabbath year, then the Jubilee year. And you will have over until the next year. That's what the Torah says. So, when Maimonides, there was a rabbi called Ben Maimon, he called it Maimonides, he wrote in one of his books, Mishneh Torah, in the 12th century, I think, that in the future, when Israel will come back from the Roman diaspora, the third gathering of the Jewish people, they will start to count the Shemitah and Yovel, that means Sabbath and Jubilee year, once more, as they did when Ezra came back from Babylon.
The third gathering is when?
So I will explain. The first gathering was from Egypt. The second was Babylon. And the third one is Rome. Now we are in the Roman diaspora. The Jews were expelled from Israel by the Romans. And this one is the third gathering in our time. And the first Aliyah happened 1881, the year 1881. They came from Russia. And the next year they started to count the years, exactly as they did when Ezra came from Babylon, because during the time of the Babylonian exile they did not count the Sabbath years because so few people were living. Jewish people were living in Israel. Most of the people were in Babylon. So when Ezra came back from Babylon, he started to count one more. And they started to celebrate and fulfill the rules of the Sabbath year, but not the Jubilee year, because you need all the 12 tribes to fulfill the commandments of the Jubilee year. But you can count the Jubilee years. Now, 1881, the year 1881, you have to understand that the Jewish year starts in the fall time with the Rosh Hashanah, September, October. So when we speak about years, we speak about Jewish way of calculating years. That year was 1881 to 1882. That was the first year when the first Aliyah came, the organized immigration from Russia, first time. That's history. The next year, the year 1882, from Rosh Hashanah, September, October, they started to count first year of the cycle of 7 years. From that time, we have had a Sabbath year in Israel. Last year was a Sabbath year. I could not eat my fruits from my garden. I could eat them, take them and eat them, but I could not gather all the fruits and take them into my house. It's not permitted. So I had to tell all my neighbors, this is Shabbat year, I'm an observant Jew, please come and take the fruits of my garden.
Because it's not... the nation observed this, right?
No, it's only for the land of Israel. Only for the land of Israel. The seventh year, the Shabbat year. So last year was a Shabbat year in Israel. Those who are not observant, they continue to make commercial, because they don't want to fulfill the Torah. But all the observant Jews, we have four ways to get vegetables and fruits, but it's not the question now. It's kind of difficult. Okay, so they started to count the Sabbath years from 1882. And if you would count the first Jubilee year, that would be 1931 until 1932. In the Jewish calendar, that's the year 5692. The Messiah did not come that year, right? 1931. And 1980 to 81 was the second Jubilee year. And the Messiah did not come then. The next time will be 2029 until 2030. That's the third witness. And they all speak the same language.
They all point at the same year.
Now, if this next Jubilee is the coming of the Messiah, that means that now we have 2 weeks left. We are in the first year of the first week. And it speaks about Pharaoh when his dreams.
It says, after 2 years, Pharaoh had a dream. Right? Joseph was 2 years more in prison. And that was after the dreams, you know, the two men who were there,
the cupbearer,
baker, and the
cupbearer.
Cupbearer. That speaks about the Messiah, right? Their dreams. One died, and one was hung on a tree, and the other one was resurrected, right? From the prison.
Put back into his office.
So you see that this dreams are speaking about the Messiah there. One has to die, one has to live. After 3 days, you have four cups.
Yes.
That's Pesach, you have four cups of wine during the Passover service. Those dreams are very messianic. You have the bread and the wine, things like that, right? 2 years after that, that means 2,000 years later, Pharaoh had a dream. And he dreams about 7 plus 7 years, 14 years. And first you have 7 good cows and 7
lean
calf, cow, skinny cow. Okay?
That's the other way to say it.
And the thing that strikes me is that the Torah takes time to speak about the dreams of Pharaoh twice. Why is it so important for the Torah to teach us about the dreams of Pharaoh? So it repeats his dreams twice. Mm-hmm. And it's in the context of the word Ketz. Miketz, that's the name of the parasha, the Torah text we read, when the dreams of Pharaoh start. In the end of 2 years, Pharaoh had a dream. Miketz, shnataim. And the word ketz means end. And that's a key word for the end time. So the Torah is giving a clue here that the dreams of Pharaoh will not only be fulfilled in the history, but also in the end time before the Messiah comes back. So first there will be 7 years of abundance, and then we will have 7 years of famine. So the end time is 14 years, 7 years, and 3.5 years. Those are 3 periods of the end time. And I'm sure personally, I believe we are right now in the first year of the 14 years. That means that we have 13.5 years left to the next Jubilee year. If the Messiah comes then we have 13.5 years left to his coming. That means that now we have a week of abundance, and then we will have some kind of tribulation for 7 years. And Joseph gave... He revealed himself to his brothers after 9 years. He was lifted up, he was elevated in Egypt, and he received the power over all the area. He could have sent messages to his father and said, I'm living, I'm still alive. He didn't do that. He was hidden. He knew that he had not the prophetic permission to reveal himself to his father and to his brothers until the time was given by God. And the first year they came, it was the first year of famine, right? So 8 years passed, and then the 9th year he revealed himself to them. That means that I believe, if this is true, we have now 7 years of abundance in the world. And after next Shabbat year, 2 years later, Yeshua will reveal himself to the Jewish people. That's what I believe.
That's in 20...
we're in 2025.
I am praying for that day every day of my life. That God will take away the veil of the Jewish people and that they will see the one who was Zechariah chapter 12 speak about. God will pour out the spirit of
supplication
and they will look up at the one who they pierced. Mm-hmm. And that's a spirit. That's not the coming back of the Messiah. That's a revelation of who he was and who he is.
Right.
And then after that, there will be an invasion of the foreign forces against Jerusalem, and then the Messiah will come back because the Jerusalem Jewish people will say Baruch haba b'shem Adonai and ask him to come back, because we will be in such a tribulation that we will
cry
out and ask God to send his Messiah. That's how I understand the things we are living right now.
We had 4 blood moons in 4 Jewish festivals. The first one was April 15, 2014. That was Passover, first night of Passover. That blood moon was not seen in Jerusalem, only in America and these areas. The next one was on Sukkot, the Feast of Tabernacles, the first night, October 8, 2014. Then we had, and that was not seen in Jerusalem. Then we had a solar eclipse, March 20, 2015. That was the first day of Nisan. Mm-hmm. It was the new year of the kings, according to Jewish tradition. That's a very important date, but it was not seen in Jerusalem. Then we had April 4th, 2015, that was also Passover, not seen in Jerusalem, only in these countries, America. But the one, September 28th, that was the first night of Sukkot, of the Tabernacle celebration, 2015, last fall, that one was seen in Jerusalem. The Talmud says that red moons speak about blood over the Jewish people. And I believe that this is a warning from God to the Jewish people in these areas of the world. America, Central America, South America, Canada. They have to leave these countries now because blood will come over them. And we have already seen people that hate Israel, hate the Jewish people, are coming in and they will do all kind of terrorist acts. And I believe also that these 4 blood moons, as they ended in Jerusalem, are speaking about something that is coming. I believe that it speaks about the last time of 14 years that has started now, the end time has started. There is a man, a young man called Nathan. He was not raised as a religious Jew. He was in Israel. He is living in Israel. He has some rabbi's ancestors, but his parents did not educate him in a Jewish way, as an observant Jew. He was very sick on the first night of Sukkot. And he went to sleep during the day, and he died. He was clinically dead for 15 minutes. And he tells this what happens with his soul. He went out through the roof of the sukkah. He went to the space far, far, far away, and there was some kind of opening. He went into that opening and came to the heavenly world. And he was—he met people he knew that had died. He met 3 rabbis that was a heavenly court for the Jewish people for that generation. We know those 3 rabbis. He gave the names of them. He saw the lake of fire, he saw many places there, he saw the paradise, and he also saw his own life, and God showed him everything he had done, good and bad. And he decided to come back because he received the option to come back to life. If he wanted, he could stay there if he wanted or go back. He decided to go back. He also saw the future, and he reveals several details about what is happening now and what will happen in the future. He saw the Messiah, he said. And the rabbi, there is a YouTube film about him, about 1.5 hours interview. 3 days later, he went to a rabbi because he came back to his body. He wanted to be an observant Jew. He made
repentance
and started to be an observant Jew.
What day was this?
It was during Sukkot, the tabernacle feast in September 2015. And he tells his testimony about the future, and he saw the Messiah, but he cannot say who he is. God did not reveal the secret to him, who he is. But he says, I know about his character. He is a man who never sinned. And everybody knows about him. And when he is revealed, everybody will be surprised. Things like that he speaks about the Messiah. That he knew when he was in the world of truth, he's called that world. And he saw the coming of the Messiah when he puts his feet on the Mount of Olives. The Mount of Olives was split into two. And when he speaks about what he saw, the rabbi started to read the prophets about the same things. And the boy said, wow, the prophet says the same thing I saw. Several things he saw, the rabbi showed in the prophets, they were the same thing. And they spoke about the war of Gog and Magog. That's one of the end time wars, according to the prophets of Israel. And the rabbi asked Nathan, do you know who Gog is? He said, yes, I know who Gog is. Who is he? Obama, he said. The President Obama is God. And he will make war against Israel, he said. And he will be killed in Israel and buried in Israel.
Who was that? Obama?
Obama.
Okay.
According to this boy, Nathan. What he saw when he was dead. And this boy, Nathan, said that the war of Gog and Magog already started. And the rabbi said, but we don't see any war here. No, he said, we don't see the war, but it started the 27th of Elul, the year 5775. He speaks Hebrew terms. What is that in Roman thinking?
Gregorian calendar.
That's the September 11, 2015. And he said, that's the date when the Gog and Magog war started. And now we don't see so much, but something big will happen, he says, that will scare all the world. People will be shocked and start to fight each other between the nations. Mm-hmm. And after that, they will come to Jerusalem and fight for Jerusalem. Now, I went into the United Nations archives to see what happened, if they had some resolution that day. And I found a very important thing. And that was September 10, 2050. The United Nations General Assembly today decided that the flags of non-member observer states shall be raised at the world body's headquarters and offices following the flags of its 193 member states. The resolution raising the flags of non-member observer states at the United Nations were adopted by a vote of 119 in favor, 2-8 against, and 45 delegations abstaining. That means that the Palestinian flag was accepted by the United Nations that day. And if you see the time when it happened, I looked at the exact time, it was 5:22, something like that, p.m. And that was already next day in Jerusalem. So that was the date that the boy said, the 27th of Elul, because of the sun, the difference of this, of the hour, the sun.
Yeah, 8 hours.
Okay. When Obama was in Egypt, there was a hieroglyph on one of the walls.
His pantry?
No. At the very beginning of his presidency.
Oh, yeah.
And he saw that man, he said, that's me. You see this?
That's him only, too.
And for some reason he had identified with Egypt. Obama created a police force that is directed by the United Nations.
Sure.
It's called Strong Cities Network. Mm-hmm. It was announced in the UN September 29, 2015. According to the information I have, that global police force will have the right to go into any city of the world without asking for permission by the nation's authorities. And that's a very important decision. I believe that this testimony of Natan is true, and it fits with many other things that we see. Okay. We spoke about Vilna Gaon,
no worries.
Eliyah ben Shlomo. He lived in the year 720 to 797. He spoke about the Churba synagogue, we spoke about that. But he also gave another prophecy about Russians' invasion in Crimea.
Yes.
It was invaded by the Russians in February 2014, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And this rabbi said before he died, let's see what he says.
Can you hear the Russians?
Okay, when you hear that the Russians have captured the city of Crimea, you should know that the times of the Messiah have started, that his steps are being heard. And when you hear that the Russians have reached the city of Constantinople, today's Istanbul, you should put on your Sabbath clothes and don't take them off, because it means that the Messiah is about to come any time. You know the tensions between Russia and Turkey?
Right now, there's big tension.
Yes.
The shuttle plane is out.
That's very important. Now, let's go to another thing. You know about ISIS? If you look at the area where ISIS started to take land, it's exactly the same area as the old Assyria.
Yes.
Exactly the same areas. And it expanded the same way as the old Assyrian empire. 35 years ago, when I started to study the prophecies about the end time, in Isaiah, Jeremiah, all these prophets, they speak about Assyria as a part of the end time map of countries around Israel. And I asked myself, where is Assyria? Now I understand why the prophets speak about Assyria, because Assyria is coming up once more through ISIS. So you see here the Assyrian area. This is the green one here.
Yeah.
It started here
dark
in
the
dark green, and it expanded all this in this area. And then you can see the same area that ISIS started.
Wow.
Okay. And according to the explanation given to these words, well, let's see these words.
Sources.
We are speaking about the prophecy of Bilam, that's Hebrew. Let's look at that one. Numbers 24:23. And he took up his discourse and said, "Alas, who shall live when God doth this? But ships shall come from the coast of Kittim," that's Cyprus, mm-hmm. "and they shall afflict Ashur, and shall afflict Eber, and he also shall come to destruction." And Balaam rose up and went and returned to his place. This is the last prophecy of Balaam. Part of this prophecy was fulfilled in this history when the Romans came, so on. But we have an end time fulfillment of that prophecy. And according to the explanation given to these words from sources that are more than 2,000 years old, the meaning of the words is this: woe is to the nation that will be found in the world at the time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, blessed be Him, redeems Israel. At the time the giant ships of the Romans, the Christians, will come and fight in the vicinity of Assyria and in the vicinity of Eber, and they will be victorious there, and they will cause affliction to the inhabitants of the place. However, even their lot will come to destruction, and then the kingdom will be given to the Messiah and to Israel. That's how they interpret the prophecy of Balaam for the end time. And now we can see that the scenario is prepared for this fulfillment. We didn't have it 5-10 years ago. Now we have ISIS in these areas. You see here,
yeah,
the extension of the area. And look at this. The vision of ISIS is the old caliphate. You see the bear?
Wow.
The same area.
It looks like a bear.
It is.
Yeah. Okay.
I got a question. Caliphate.
The vision of ISIS is to restore the old caliphate. And then you see the areas that from Iran to Algeria, Mauritania, half Africa. It looks like a bear. Okay, I will finish with this one. You know about Daniel. He speaks about the king of the north and the king of the south. And I was checking, you know about the history about Alexander the Great. He divided his kingdom in four areas. The north and the south area were the most important areas for Israel. That's why you can find it in all the book of Daniel, chapter 11. The wars between the northern king and the southern king. In that time it was Syria and Egypt. But if you look at the areas of what was the northern king, it's also including Iran. And when it speaks in Daniel about the southern king, it looks like it's not including Egypt. Because there is one part there that Egypt says Egypt will also be attacked. When it speaks about an attack between the northern king and the southern king, and Egypt will not escape. So it looks like in the prophecy of Daniel, the southern king is something else than Egypt. And now we can see the tension between Iran and Saudi Arabia. In the book of Daniel, you have a part in the last part of Daniel, Daniel 11. It says, "In the end time," and it's the same word "ketz" there, the same word as when Pharaoh had his dreams.
The ketz, ketz.
The northern king will attack the southern king.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have an old prophecy in Hebrew from the Middle Age. It's called Yalkut Shimoni. We don't know exactly when it was written. It's a book. It could be from the 14th century, but after the print system was invented, this book started to be spread in the world. So it could be from the 16th century. But the important thing is the message. It says here, Rabbi Yitzchak said the year that the King Messiah will be revealed, all the kings of the nations will provoke each other. Wars, armed and verbal confrontations in the entire expanse of the world. The king of Paras, that's Iran, will provoke an Arab king, that means Arabia, Arabia. It could be Iraq, Saudi Arabia, or Jordan. I believe it's Saudi Arabia. And the Arab king will go to Edom, who is understood to be by the Chazal, that means the rabbis, as the Christian empire, the Western world. To take advice from them, requesting help and assistance from the US or Europe, Western world. Then the king of Paras, Iran, will go ahead and destroy the whole world. Iran starting terrorist acts or war throughout the world according to its threats. And all the nations of the world will tremble and be panicky and will fall on their faces, and pains like birth pangs will take hold of them. And Israel will tremble and be panicky and will say, "Where will we come and go?" And he will say to them, that means HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, blessed be Him, he will answer Israel the following: "My children, do not be afraid. Whatever I made, I only made for your benefit. Why are you afraid? Don't be afraid. The days of your redemption has arrived. And the first redemption, the exodus from Egypt, is not like the final redemption. Since in the first redemption you had pain and servitude to foreign kingdoms, and after it, the exiles. But in the final redemption, you don't have pain or servitude to foreign kingdoms after it." These things are very, very interesting. You see those Jewish prophecies about the end time.